The final part of this evening is an opportunity for you guys to ask Patrick and I any questions you want. We're going to keep this short. We've been at this for a while, which I think is a good thing because lots of people have points. Just so you know, we don't get too boisterous, we've brought in Amanda to kind of keep the peace. She's the association chair and she'll pick the questions. So any questions you like.
There's all this understandable talk of, you know, dealing with the tuition fee, which I fear is going to be probably one of the fundamental issues of our generation and potentially generation after us to deal with. But I think certainly in Uni Hall, from speaking to freshers, you know, they're sort of asking, what do I do about accommodation for the rest of my degree and stuff? And obviously they hear that, you know, private accommodation market in this town is far from cheap. But then again, you know, halls aren't necessarily a cheap option either. So obviously in the Senior Student Forum, you raised the fact that you were going to pursue capping, trying to get them to stop the fees, as in the past they've been above inflation. Are there any other measures that the union's taking to try and aid making accommodation and stuff in this town more affordable?
Yeah,
especially with £6,000 fee plus £20,000 something for your living costs over 4 years.
So I mean, we've been looking at doing things in the private sector and with the university as well. In the private sector, we tried to launch a rent freeze campaign just because usually the issue of affordability seems to be off the agenda, or it's always on the agenda, but you can never question how the rents in the private sector in an effective way, or because it's the market who decides, you know, that's often been the report in the past. So this year we said, okay, at the very least, let's send them an email and say, are you willing to consider a rent freeze? And we had, we only have a number of about 60 registered landlords with us, individual private landlords. Out of them, three got back to us and said, yes, we'll do a rent freeze. And then we then sent it out to the different estate agents. And the estate agents, I wasn't aware before, but they actually recommend the rents for the different individual landlords who are beneath them. And actually, we got a lot more positive response from them. So some of them got back to them and says, yeah, and they've given me a copy and said, actually, yes, we've already told our landlords not to increase rent if possible this year, or if so, do it at a very low level because it's been increased quite a lot in previous years. On the back of my having emailed out, another couple got in touch and said, you know, we're also going to tell them to increase it as little as possible. So we're not going to see huge increases across the board in the private sector. So it's had a limited success so far. This is the period where landlords are deciding on their rents, to getting towards the end of that period. So, you know, I think it would be good to do a final push on that. With the university accommodation prices, they have since 2004 court been linked to inflation. So unfortunately this year, you know, big sort of rises in inflation, so it's sitting around 5%. Now what I've already got out of from speaking to Roger Smith is that, oh, well, you know, it won't be 5.5%, it looks like, or what he's recommending won't be something like 5.5%, it'll be something around 5% increases, which is, for me, is not acceptable. So when it goes to PARC, the Planning Resource Committee, I won't be supporting that increase, and we'll be making the argument that there should be a lower increase. If ideally there should be a rent freeze, but that there should be a lower increase. Because in the past, it's the way they've used the money, they've just finished off paying off Fife Park, the new Fife Park. They haven't got a clear idea about, they're going to be generating with this increase about a £4 million surplus. Now it does go back into the residences. There are some maintenance, there's some maintenance to be done, but that £4 million isn't accounted for at the moment. So, you know, I've been making the argument with student bursaries, student loans aren't going up, you know, inflation's going up anyway on a whole host of other issues, on items that students will be buying anyway. Tuition fees are going up. Now's not the time to have, on top of all that, a 5% increase. So this would be the first year that I'm not, that the president isn't putting his name to an increase in line with inflation, but I'm just not comfortable doing it.
I was wondering kind of like what
is being done, or kind of like how accountable the bursary and like scholarship scheme in line with the tuition fee rise is, because it appeared to me that, like, I think maybe there were four things she mentioned in the email, and like three of them weren't specifically for rest of UK students, which just seemed really weird, because it was like, yeah, we're like we're charging rest of UK students way more now, but like we're giving other people bursaries. And it's not that I don't think that everyone should have bursaries, but I don't think that that's specifically related to the £9,000 rise. Like, that's great, but it's not like gonna help anyone pay that any more so. So I'm kind of wondering if, like, what your kind of action has been on that.
I can tell you the accountability of the bursaries is pretty poor. Patrick lobbied there's been a bursary committee set up. Patrick lobbied to get student representation on that committee, and we were told it wasn't appropriate to have student representation on that committee. I think that's not appropriate to give us that answer, to be honest. But we've not given up. I've got a project in the pipeline that's called the Working Bursary, that will provide, based on the American model that the principal likes, the proctor likes, both in theory. We've got to iron out a lot of the kinks, a lot of the practicalities so far, but that's in the pipeline. That should hopefully will affect about four students next year, but it will increase year on year. Patrick and I have also been there lobbying Stephen McGee, who's the vice principal for external affairs, and he's the guy in charge of bursaries. And I think we're getting a meeting with him very soon. We've got a huge program of things to bring to him. We tried to bring this program to court during the court away day, but court away day ended up being a 45-minute presentation from the university about how hard it was for them to widen access. And then a 15-minute discussion about how hard it was for everyone to widen access. And then Patrick and I brought our ideas in about 5 minutes. But we're not giving up. We've got a lot of plans. We're pushing them forward with the right people.
I mean, on the specific widening access as well, I got an email just the last couple of days saying that I will be on a working group, a policy group, which had been set up to develop it finally, which is what I've been lobbying from since we came in. Where is the policy on widening access? And just to kind of double back, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that those bursaries were set out without consultation with us. Concerns were raised in university court by other academics who were on there, and yet it was the same one who went to press that very day after court. So, you know, that's a bursary scheme that's been set up by the principal's office, not by university court or by student representatives.
Would your widening access thing include, like, the widening access section of the SLC?
Yeah, Claire is on that as well. Yeah. Claire Simmons would be on that. No.
You want to be on it as well, Gabriel?
So, your question.
Okay. Do you have any idea of what's happening with regards to new bypass construction?
Because I think the original plan was to knock down old Five Park houses in progressive steps, and then that stopped, and nothing seems to have been built. And I think there's a long-term plan to bring down Albany as well. And they're the two.
Yeah, I mean, I can say on that front there doesn't seem to be anyway, and they're actually planning for investing in Albany. So that's a kind of reassurance for the like long-term maintenance of Albany. So they're. And I've certainly lobbied in order to keep Albany as well, but there's a lot of worries about it, but as far as I'm aware, they're unfounded for Albany. For the old Fife Park, it seemed like they kind of ran out of money for the new Fife Park, new Fife Park, which was a bit of a godsend, because, you know, at least then they're keeping old Fife Park for the moment until 2014. That's when they've got the HMO license. Until around 2014, there's going to be another battle where hopefully sabbaticals and, you know, those who campaign for low cost accommodation will be saying, you can push Fife Council to get another HMO extension, because that's what they managed to do it in the past. Why can't you do it again? Yeah. So there is a resident strategy working group where these big issues should be worked out. And overall, the issue being discussed there's two different points of view. One is that any surplus from residential and business services should be spent on maintenance. So we've got a backlog of maintenance. Andrew Melville. A lot of people weren't happy with Andrew Melville from the university point of view, just to kind of... and it would basically cost a lot of money to get up to standard, Andrew Melville. So, but it's been listed. It's now a listed building. So so they don't really have a choice, it seems. They have to spend quite a lot of money on maintenance. So the issue has been, should that surplus from RBS be spent on a new build and new Fife Park, or should it be spent on long-term maintenance? And really, I mean, long-term maintenance does have to be spent anyway. Hopefully that... Sorry? I'm not sure, but yeah, just as an architectural wonder. Yeah, architecturally it's listed, yeah.
Patrick Pedigal.
Is there any more questions for Patrick?
Yeah, just a second point. Just in the same sort of vein. New students coming in, where are they going to live? Because Fife Park is now postgrad to the point where if I go around Fife Park, all of them are postgrads and they don't think anyone else should be. I think the university pretty much allocated that to the postgrads. And I know a lot of the entrance students have come in and had nowhere to live and had to try and find somewhere to live in a house and rent in their first
nice
year.
There's some nice tents in the quarters.
Yeah.
the university does guarantee accommodation in hall for all first years. So, and in terms of Fife Park, yes, they did decide to allocate it to returning students because there was such a minimum number of new students were in there last year anyway. So this year they decided to go completely with returning students. So not all postgraduates. I mean, I know from my own experience, there's actually some first years who've come from a foundation course who are in there. But in terms of other plans for Fife Park in Albany is that this year they want to switch to, and we've been working with them on this, a system where it will be a sort of means tested people who come from or a low income background slash, you know, have a high loan because they come from a low income background slash don't have a lot of, you know, like don't have a lot of cash liquidity to spend. So they will be prioritized for people who are in financial hardship basically. And that's been sort of de facto done anyway, but it's not been done with any kind of standard. So it's just if you write to them and you say, yeah, I'm in a financial hardship, but then don't check anything or they don't look at your loan, they just have to, and they just look at people's statements and anything could be in there. So they're looking at it a bit more strictly this year to say, okay, let's make sure it really is for people who are in financial hardship. It's a difficult question. You know, so means testing is intrusive, but you don't want to create a ghetto for students who are just from a low income background either. But at the same time, the amount of affordable accommodation available is so minimum that shouldn't it be prioritised? So, I mean, I'm happy to take feedback on that as well in our direction.
You said at the kind of court meeting you managed to get £1 million of the redistributed money, which is going to go to university, into fees. With the rubber stamping today of the 9Ks for RUK, do you know, is that money coming? Is St Andrews getting the £1 million, which is going into that?
I can answer that. It's not the answer you want. We don't know. I was in an audit and risk meeting last week where we discussed this. We're expecting the confirmation in the new year. What happens? Just to take a moment. The Scottish Government confirms its tranches of money at different times. This may seem like a system that is designed to be as unuser-friendly as possible for universities. I think that may be because it is. We get the different money at different times. As yet, we don't know what the redistribution is going to be. The million figure is based on the previous estimations of what that's going to be. And I think the million is... It was a low estimation. You know, it was... Andy Gore, the finance director, he likes to plan for the worst. So I have very high hopes for this, but we can't confirm anything until the new year.
Okay, this is just picking up on something that was said earlier. And the question is, how are you going to address this? How are you going to address the fact that many people in the university feel that student associations are being politicised by yourselves? And how are you going to hope to address this?
I would refer to a little bit to what Tamara mentioned as well, and saying that coming out against tuition fees or education cuts. That's, yeah, it's a political move. And, you know, I think the SRC and us as representatives, you know, have to make political choices. And choosing not to speak up on certain issues and choosing to stay silent is just as political as choosing to speak out about something and make a move on it. But yeah, over, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I do take the point into consideration. Whilst, you know, the SRC does have a right to vote on its policies, and we don't speak out a ton or take any positions which haven't been, I mean, within reason. Obviously, there's any of the important issues, any of the big ones, we don't speak out on them unless they've been voted on by the SRC. And actually, most things have been voted on unanimously by the SRC, who has a range of political opinions within it. So I think that when that happens, and there is a political consensus across the left and right, you know, it's important, left and right, or people who are just, you know, not, don't put, and that includes a lot of people who don't put themselves on either left or right, and they're not taking that kind of position, they're just maybe looking out for students' interests. So we have achieved a good consensus within SRC, but I do think that we should continue to make an effort so that we're not seen as only representing one kind of, you know, political viewpoint or political interest. It's a balancing act between what we've been elected to do by students and what our manifestos are, and making sure that we don't alienate any groups of students who would then feel that we don't represent them. Because, as I said from the beginning, we want to represent all students and all their concerns, but sometimes it's not always possible to have one position.
I'm going to be less conciliatory. I was elected to get better, to improve advising and to look at a personal tutor system. I was elected to improve module evaluation. I was elected to stand against tuition fees, to look at gender equality. Those are the things I'm going to do. Those are the things I'm working on. That's what I spend all of my time doing. If people think I'm being politicised for doing that, then yeah, they're right. Because I'm doing that because I was elected democratically to do it. You don't represent anyone by doing nothing. And so I'm going to keep taking positions. I'm going to keep justifying those positions. I'm going to keep being open and accountable about why I've taken those positions, but I'm going to keep doing my job.
I think a lot of students will actually, like, personally, I think you guys, like, this is just like, maybe no one agrees, but like, I personally believe that in the last 3 years, you guys have been the most, like, active. And with politicization, like, I disagree with you guys politically most likely. Well, I know with you, Patrick, but like, but I have no problem with that, with your representing me, because I know that, like, you know when one line and when another starts, and I think we should have more politicized sabbaticals, if that means that you guys are gonna be like, care about what you're fighting for, which apparently wasn't happening in the past because you didn't really see much emotion.
Steady.
On that note.
Yeah, with this politicization issue and kind of like, you know, people emailing and being like, can you take me off the left sort of email list?
it's not really
we'll just take that as an example.
That wasn't organized by the SRC, although, like, you know, we did support like people doing kind of occupations and things. The actual point is that with, for example, that the people that felt most strongly were politicized people, and they just went out and kind of and did it. And so, like, it's not really so much a question of, you know, the SRC just trying to be as, like, left sock as possible, as, like, those are the people, like, even those kind of occupations, they're not meant to be necessarily this way or the other way. Like, those are just the most politicized people who are the most proactive, who went out and did something.
Question, Chloe?
I clearly missed the entire of that debate, but I did just want to point out that the occupations weren't organised by LEFSOC and were not only LEFSOC members. The point of the occupations were they were about fee increases, and fee increases affect all students. Therefore, it was a massive range of students that had a problem with the fee increase and wanted to do something about it. It's a political issue in that it's against the government's decision, but it's not a political decision. It's not a political issue in that it's a particular political party that is supporting or running the occupations.
I think the point that I was making earlier when it came to this issue may have been lost a bit. I wasn't saying that people should not have like left-wing views and that that alienates everyone else. That certainly wasn't what I was saying. What I'm saying is simply that there needs to be other forums where people feel that their political views are represented, and this issue is not being politicized, if you see what I'm saying. Because I don't think it's an issue of left or right. I think it's an issue of a human right to like have the education that you should be afforded by your government. And my point being is that I think there is certainly this pervasive idea that it is a very like really left-wing liberal idea. And I think that is definitely a communication error, because it isn't. So that's my frustration. It's with the fact that people, you know, my flatmate Sandra is the most like right-wing person in terms of her politics, but certainly believes in the fact that the 9 grand raise is wrong, but also feels alienated by the movement within St. Andrews, because she feels like, well, I wanted Michael Forsyth for rector, I'm not welcome. And I think that's the issue that I'm worried about, and which I find is like a communication problem.
I just want to back that up completely. I mean, I don't understand this perspective that because people are more politically active, they have more of a right. I'm not sure if that's what you're trying to say.
No, I wasn't saying that at all. I'm saying
that confused me.
People who are visible, it's not because they're this way or that way, it's just because they're proactive people.
Okay. But I think, what about the kind of the silent majority, as it were? What about the people who don't feel like they're involved in, you know, student politics? What about the people who don't feel like it really affects them? I think.
But
the thing is, we're the proactive people who are doing it. But it's all very well to say we'll get involved, but what are we doing about it? What's being done? I mean, it's all, you can sit back and say, well, they're just being lazy and they can do what they like. But it's a consistent issue. So is it? I mean, does that just mean that everyone else is doing something wrong, or does it mean that there's something that needs to be addressed by the proactive people?
I think we've got to remember it's a very easy issue to talk about during a union general election. It's very, very easy to say we're not communicating enough. We've gone almost 2 hours through a debate event, and I haven't quoted the West Wing, so I'm going to do it now. Decisions are made by those who show up. We need to keep reaching out. We need to keep having events like this where we get to debate things. We need to go out and talk to people, and we do that. We need to keep writing in the student media, and we do that. We can always do it more, and we will try to do it more. We will try to bring in new events where people can come and talk and discuss. But we can only provide the opportunity. When you force people to vote, when you force people to become engaged in politics, you become Australia.
Which is not bad. There's
a question in the middle. I just wanted to say before everyone leaves that about the involvement, I think at least as school presidents, we've seen how Sam has been involved, considering he shows up even when he's near death, so that he's so ill. So I just wanted to say thank you.
He's near death too. Can we wrap it up there when someone says something nice about me?
Someone else wants to say something. No?
Do you want to say something?
I'm into reactive, not proactive people.
I'm sure, I don't know if you're going to sum up and stuff, Sam, but no. I think what I'd like is I'd love for people to give a little bit of feedback about today as well, not right now, though. I'm not going to keep you longer so you can feedback about it. But I don't think we've got any. It would be great to have some post-its or something like that, if anyone's got any, just so that people could maybe write a little note anonymously if you want, because sometimes you can then say, oh, it's just boring, or it was great, and you know. But if people could email in to us and just say how they thought it went. Was there enough space for a sabbatical question time? Was there enough space for everyone else to speak? Was it too, no one's going to say it's too short, I don't think. Was it too long? How, you know, did everyone get a chance to speak though? So these kind of questions, because I think this is the first time I've done it, and we'd, you know, it's a learning curve as well. And I personally think it's gone really well, and you know, I've learned a lot as well, and a lot of great ideas coming from people.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, for people who want to kind of like, who've been here and have thought there are some really good ideas and have got some really good ideas and want to work on something specifically, I think it would be really great if there was some way to like, you know, contact other people who, like within the forum or whatever, to be like, if anyone wants to kind of work on this together, like, let's go and do this, so that like actual practical kind of, you know, results come out of the discussions of the forum.
I'm just going to start by thanking you all. Had some incredible points made. And I hope we can do this again, once if not twice next semester, because I think this is a really valuable exercise and you deserve to get the chance to debate on these things. And the more we do it, the better student representation becomes. Cheers.